We are talking about teenage runaways. It's a problem that, oh my gosh, I had no idea really it is happening to the extent that it is. Susan Reyna Guerrero is the CEO of Covenant House Illinois. Hi, Susan. You're on WGN.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on, Steve.
You know, it's a pleasure, and I want to hear about all the good work you do, and we will. I am curious, was I right in setting this up, saying there are more teenage runaways than ever? And if so, why the heck is that going on?
You know, it's interesting. You referenced it earlier with your team. It's teenage runaways, but it's young people experiencing homelessness. And why are they fleeing, right? The majority of them are fleeing for a myriad of reasons, but clearly their gender expression and them representing the LGBTQ plus population, those numbers really far exceed some of the reasons why they are running away and they're leaving their homes and they're experiencing it being safer in the community than staying in their homes.
Well, I want to talk about both those factors. So first off, in general, why are we seeing this happen and why do you think it's happening? And maybe we don't know. You don't know why it's happening more than ever before. Homelessness in general is up for people of all ages. Is that part of it?
Correct. Well, I mean, it is, right? There aren't enough resources to respond to the needs, right? Particularly here in Chicago, we've been slower, I personally think, to respond to the needs of young people experiencing homelessness. But we know there was a recent point in time count, which is what Chicago, well, across the country, we do it regularly. And the numbers are significantly higher and, you know, myriad of reasons, right? But we know our numbers this year are particularly higher because we've had a number of new arrivals. But, you know, the goal is to end homelessness, and how do we do that? It's clearly an intersection of housing, employment, you know, everything needs to align clearly. But young people in particular, I feel, are experiencing the challenges related to, you know, lack of investment in education and community and all those other things that we know, the intersection of all those factors. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, homelessness is contributed by the things that are upstream, right? We look at foster care. About 30% of the young people that are experiencing housing instability have exited the child welfare system, right? 30%, right? There was a large study that was done by Chapin Hall that really looked at what some of those factors are. 33% of them were part of the foster care system. 50% of them were incarcerated. And 40% of them identify as in the LGBTQ plus population. And so the intersection between housing instability and gender identity is very significant. And then throw in the BIPOC population, the numbers even become more significant.
Wow. Okay. A lot to, as they say, unpack there. So I want to talk about the LGBTQ plus community. Why is that overrepresented? Why do we have so many and maybe more, even percentage-wise, that identify themselves in that community than, say, just even a couple of years ago?
You know, I think it's the lack of acceptance and the stigma that's still very much a reality. It's finding acceptance in their communities. You know, some communities are more welcoming than others. Some households are more welcoming than others. So I think they're fleeing, you know, perhaps, you know, they're experiencing it being safer to be out in the community than being in their homes. Parents don't accept them. The community doesn't accept them. And then they're looking for a community that's welcoming and affirming. And that's very hard to find. So they're leaving their homes. They're looking for community, and they feel it's better, you know, out someplace else. And so, you know, you look at, you know, how they're surviving. They're exchanging sex, perhaps, for basic needs. There's mental health issues, significant mental health issues. And, you know, so they're leaving their homes because they feel it's better in the community than being in their home. Or there is no home, right? There's violence in the community. Or, you know, many times their households themselves aren't stable. So, or they're forced to leave, perhaps because parents are making difficult choices and it's better for them to leave home than stay in the home.
Well, this sector I'm kind of involved with, and it's been called a pandemic within the pandemic. I'm talking about domestic violence, domestic abuse, which is way up. Is that part of all this where people actually of any gender, any sex that identify in any which way feel I'm safer away than in my own home?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, the young people that we work with every day, when they feel comfortable and they tell us their stories, clearly their homes, maybe there's lots of substance use, there's violence between the parents, or there's violence onto them, there's abuse. And again, it is just, it's not safe. You know, many times we know the impact of intergenerational homelessness. So, you know, a lot of the parents of the young people that we work with now, they were homeless themselves. So, you know, if you have family homelessness, which we know that's on the rise as well, young people are experiencing homelessness at a younger age. And so they're growing up, you know, with that housing instability, and many times their parents were unstable as well. So a lot of our young people have been homeless on and off their whole life since birth.
Well, we've kind of identified the problem. What we haven't done is, okay, talk about what we can do about it as a community in Chicago. Talking from Covenant House, Illinois, with Susan Reyna Guerrero, who is the CEO of this nonprofit organization, which does what, Susan?
Oh, my God. Thanks, Steve, again. Well, we're providing resources and affirming, welcoming space for young people experiencing housing instability, 18 to 24-year-olds. We're in East Garfield Park. We have an interim housing program, which means young people can stay there. It's designed to be short term, but there aren't a lot of resources for them to go to. So many of them stay much longer, but they're with us. We provide employment and education, wraparound services. We also have a very large drop-in program where young people that still are unstably housed, perhaps they're couch surfing or they're riding the trains or they're, you know, just surviving. They can come in during the day. They can get meals, shower, do laundry, store their belongings. Engage with our clinical case management team. We have an outreach and aftercare program where once our young people leave our program, we're able to support them up to 6 months. We go into encampments and, you know, try to engage young people, let them know where we are. And then our newest program, it's a rites of passage program where young people can stay up to 2 years. Mm. And that's really designed to support them, you know, help them find out what they want to do career-wise, you know, education-wise, and then support them so that they save enough money, then they can get their own apartments. But I think the need is really important for young people to have services that are really tailor-made for them. And I think that's what's unique with youth-serving organizations. There are adult-serving organizations, which are wonderful, and family organizations. But for youth organizations, you really need to be able to respond to their developmental needs. You know, think of yourself, right? When you were 19, 20, what did you want to do, right? And I think our young people need spaces where they can still developmentally, you know, feel safe, but then they're also supported and guided to do, you know, to continue to make better decisions for themselves that'll help them in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely. Give me the age group of what you're talking about here.
So these are 18 to 24-year-olds.
All right. So let's say there is someone who came into your program at the age of 20, 21, somewhere in there, and is a part mm-hmm. of the two-year plan you have. Do you have those more experienced now, hopefully, on their way to a better life? Do you have the mentor others that are younger that just came in?
Yes. I mean, I think that's the key thing, is that providing role models, and we emphasize a lot of peer support, right? So our young people who are further along in their continuum of development, right, that they're recognizing the importance of being responsible and waking up and going to work and saving your money, right? That provides a valuable role model for our 18 and 19-year-olds, right, because they can see that's the way out and movement towards stability. But it's you know, there's lots of bumps in the road. There's no straight line to success for our young people because they've been through so much trauma. Yeah. They have experienced systems that have neglected them and overlooked them and have failed them. And it takes a long time for them to trust. And I think that's what I'm so happy about is our location. We're on Lake Street. We're close to transportation. And it's a welcoming, safe space. It's, you know, it's got a safe courtyard. You know, we do activities with them. We provide them and offer them all the skills they need. And it takes a long time for them to really trust us and access those resources. I mean, many times the biggest thing is that they need their IDs and paperwork. We've had young people, Steve, that don't even know their real name because they've been bounced around so much.
Wow.
And so, you know, being able to support them and connect, like, with legal pro bono attorneys and, you know, work with DCFS and work with the city to be able to get that documentation. Because how can you start anything if you don't really have your birth certificate or your Social Security card? And they moved around so much that they've lost their documents. So we also serve as a place to store, help them, you know, they each get lockers. We can store things for them. Because that's crucially important. But I think I've never been so humbled by how hard some of our young people will work. You know, wake up at the crack of dawn and go and work and then come back and, you know, really know that some of them know this isn't, you know, this is really short term. And for others, it takes a long time because they've really been through such a difficult journey to get to us.
Do you follow some of the stories so you can say, we've had these success stories. Look at this person now. Who's living a great life with two children, has a regular job, that kind of thing.
Yes, we have had a number of wonderful success stories. You can go on our website and you can see it, you know, you can see, read some of them there. But I think of one young person who happened to, and they got introduced to somebody that came on site, and they continued to foster that partnership. We had a visitor. And now this young person has an apartment, they're working, they're giving back to the community. They come by and they visit, they bring other partners to us. So, I mean, I think there is wonderful success stories to our young people and the resilience. And, you know, but it's them forging that trusted partnership that makes the difference. And that's what we like to do. We're a low barrier shelter. It's not conditional on them having to do certain things. We meet them where they are, and then we support them. And then in time, they develop the trust with us, and we can make real incredible things happen. But it takes a long time.
What if where they are continues to be to have a drug problem or any kind of substance abuse problem and or mental health issues, sometimes in combination, I suspect?
Yeah, no, and that makes it all exceptionally difficult, right? But we do have trained clinical case managers that partner with our young people. And it's, you know, we adopt a harm reduction model, which means that our goal, you know, to tell somebody stop using when that has been their coping skill is not helpful. It's not going to work. All you're going to do is chase that person away, right? So the goal is to partner with them and really have, you know, deep conversations with them. Like, if you continue to drink every night, you know, what's going to happen if you continue to use a substance? What's going to happen if you get drug tested for this job or all these jobs that you want, you're not going to be able to get because of these things. And through engagement and use, you know, different techniques, motivational interviewing, that's one of them, where we really help young people see how, and this, we all do this, right? You know, the decisions we make have consequences, right? And if we keep on making decisions that aren't the best for us, we're going to lose opportunities. And, you know, during the course of engagement, affirming, having partnership with our young people, you know, we make small incremental success. Now, granted, it doesn't always work, right? And then our responsibility is to find who can work with that young person. So we have other partners in the space that we work with, and we support them, and we continue to engage our young people. But the goal is to find what works for them and in the best way possible and in the quickest way possible. But many times that takes a really long time.
I want to talk again about the LGBT plus community because mm-hmm. they are overrepresented. We talked a little bit about why. All right, so if they feel they are not accepted, first off, I suspect you do accept them, but how do they know that? How do they get that message that it's okay to be who you are?
You know, we have been very deliberate. And again, I would encourage you to come see our space, Steve. It's welcoming and affirming, right? And so in the signage and in the words and in our staff, right, we've been deliberate in making sure that our staff are representative of the community. We have a diverse staff. We also have, like, signage and, things that convey that we will welcome you. Like, you know, when we have group meetings, we always say, your pronoun, right? You introduce yourself and your pronoun, right? How we set up our clothing closet, right? You know, making sure that, you know, it's gender neutral, we have gender neutral bathrooms, right? So things that really convey acceptance and welcoming across the agency and across the center is something that we really prided ourselves in. And it's in our language and in our, our signage and how we do the different, our programming. We have, different types of groups, male and male identifying groups, female and female identifying groups. We have LGBTQ plus groups. So it's really offering an array of services and welcoming space, I think, is something that we do deliberately. And we are always learning. We recognize we don't get it right all the time, but being humble about it, I think, is really important. And then we also seek a lot of youth voice. So our youth have a lot of say in what things look like and programming, and they identify what they want.
A couple of text questions here, 312-981-7200. Mm-hmm. Is this dormitory living, or do they have their own individual rooms?
Yeah, so in our rites of passage, our transitional housing program, there's two youth to room. And then in our interim shelter, which is designed to be the short-term program, there's anywhere from 2 to 4 young people in a room. And then they have, the bathrooms are all, I always say, one-stop shop, right? So it's a shower, a toilet, and a sink. So that's something we ensure privacy there. And there's community space and a large kitchen and those other resources.
Another question is, are they fully integrated? I'm not sure if they mean racially or what, but go ahead and give it a shot to answer.
You know, it's interesting. Somebody asked me this previously. With our bedrooms, right? You know, we have up to 30, we have 37 young people on one floor and then 19 on the other. So how they room, you know, the roommates, as it were, right? They're how they identify, right? So, you know, we have trans youth, we have, you know, gay, lesbian, transgender youth, right? So the rooms are designed by the room, you get room assignment based on your gender expression. And that's something that our young people know that coming into the space. And I think it is remarkable how welcoming and accepting 99% of the young people are to trans youth, you know, to, you know, just to the diversity in our population. So, you know, we will have female and female identifying rooms and male identifying rooms. And we are trying something new in our rites of passage where we have, where we have nine binary rooms, and we will see how that goes. I think it's really guided by what our young people feel creates a sense of safety and welcoming community.
If people want to help or volunteer in some way, what might they do and how can they sign up to do it?
Oh, my God. Well, I'm glad you asked. We have one major we have one major fundraiser a year. It's our sleep out. And this is something that happens across all of the Covenant Houses. We're part of a larger federation, right? So Covenant House Illinois opened up in 2017, and we opened up our new location in 2021, which is in East Garfield Park. So every November, and this year it's November 21st, we have a sleep out. And essentially it's an opportunity for people to learn what youth homelessness is about. We're able to profile the amazing talents of our young people. So it serves as an education and a highlight opportunity for what our young people do. And then it's a fundraiser. So we actually sleep out that night. This year it's at the CME building on 30 South Wacker, and we will spend the night outside. And it's part designed to really show solidarity for young people who experience that sense of uncertainty of what happens that night. And this year we have a very lofty goal of raising $650,000. $650,000. Oh, my God, I'm getting my numbers wrong. Anyhow, we're looking to raise a significant amount of money. And the goal is that every sleeper raises funds. And so if folks are interested, the online registration is open. So it's Covenant House, IL, all one word, .org, whatever that line,
slash.
Sleep Out Chicago.
Okay, or just simply Covenant House, IL. .org, and there you will find more information about all of this. Susan Reyna Guerrero, CEO of Covenant House Illinois, thank you so much, and thank you for the amazing work that all of you do, including your volunteers.
Oh my God, Steve, thank you so much for highlighting this really important need and issue. I'm really grateful. We need to talk about this because we know there's more that needs to be done.
Indeed.
We know if we don't deal with young people now, they're going to grow up to be the homeless adults and homeless families. So it's really important we have an opportunity now to respond. And we can do this. We just need to work together and continue to collaborate.